Welcome to the Groups Matter podcast show. I'm Brian Daniel, and as always, I'm here with Rick Howerton. This is episode 24. 24, Rick.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Seems impossible.
Mm-hmm. Are you recovering? I know we've talked about it a lot, but you're walking. You're not in a wheelchair. I'm assuming off drugs.
I am off drugs.
Always good.
Said that. I was off drugs before I started the surgery too, so that's good. But yeah, I'm doing very well. Soon I'll be back to normal, I hope. So tell me, is your birthday coming up? Is that right?
Well, it's already come and gone. Appreciate you asking. I didn't know you kept up with that sort of thing.
Sorry, I missed it.
Yeah. Well, you were disposed, I think is the word. Yeah. So I got this. I read an article on wearable tech. Actually, it's an article on trends, technological trends of 2016, and one of those things was wearable tech. You know what wearable tech is?
I have no idea.
It's like an Apple Watch or a Fitbit. You've seen those bands that people wear.
Yeah.
My wife got me this Uber Fitbit. It's called the Fitbit Blaze, and it's changed my life.
It's changed your life?
Yeah.
Tell me how it's changed your life.
Well, you put goals in there. So, you know, the earliest of those, they counted steps. So this one counts steps as well. But it also counts calories. I have a calorie use goal. It tracks all exercise. I've got stairs goals. It gives me my heart rate all the time. So as of today, I have like 2 weeks worth of resting heart rate and weight that it tracks. I mean, it's just opened up this whole new world. It's like having an accountability physical fitness coach with me all the time.
On your wrist?
On my wrist. It gives me notifications when I need to get up and walk. I put water in there, and since I have been hitting my water goals, it's just amazing what a difference that makes.
For a minute, I thought you meant you put water in your Fitbit, and you can just drink from your Fitbit.
That would be next generation technology.
Yeah, as
right?
cool as that is. That's
but I
cool.
also get text messages on it, and meeting notifications come through on it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool. I would recommend everybody get one. I always thought the step counting was kind of silly for a while, but then I got this, and I'm trying. I work to get those 10,000 steps in every day. And I think I'm averaging. I mean, I'm averaging like 14,000 steps a day. I still push mow my yard, and so that's good for a lot of steps.
That is super impressive.
And it helps your average.
Whoa.
So yeah, appreciate you asking, but I would. It's not like they're a sponsor of the show or anything, but that's pretty cool. So we've got Tim Smith today. And Tim is going to comprise the bulk of today's episode. And so Tim officially is the state missionary.
Yes, a term they use in Georgia.
Of the Georgia Baptist Mission Board.
Yep.
And his ministry area is groups and faith development.
Yeah.
That sounds like a big deal to me.
Well, it is a big deal. And Tim, one of the reasons I'm really excited, Brian, about Tim being on the show, Tim works with churches that are small churches as well as mega churches. Georgia's made up that way. Lots of mega churches, lots of smaller churches. So what we're going to hear from him are universal principles that will work in any setting. That's exciting stuff.
You know, Tim and I actually go back, right? Did you know that?
You'd mentioned, I think, that maybe you were in his church at one point.
So we were at Tabernacle Baptist Church when I was called to full-time ministry and came to what was then the Baptist Sunday School Board, and Tim was the director of education there at the time. And since then, I've been here in some capacity since, but I think he still holds his membership there at Tabernacle, I think, the last time I talked to him. But then he has been with the Georgia Baptist for, we're now the Georgia Baptist Mission Board for a long time.
Well, I'm thrilled we're giving him the time we're giving him because his knowledge base, as well as his understanding of church life in various settings with various types of leadership, is just going to be huge.
Yeah. And, apparently he's on the road. When we were getting ready for the show, I asked him about that, and I think he was on the road all the entire month of April, but maybe 2 days. So he's in and out of churches, and my assumption is that the makeup of these churches is in, just runs the gamut from, I think he calls them, micro and mega.
Yeah.
So he's in churches of like 50 all the way up to 1,000, and so he knows what's going on in education and groups in Georgia, and he gets around a little bit too. He's obviously with the Georgia Baptist, but it's a bit national as well.
Well, it's obvious he's a highly sought-after person if he's out that much.
Well, let's get him on the show.
Excellent. Tim, we are thrilled that you're here with us, man. And you know, one thing that we're excited about is that you work with so many churches and have done so for so long. You've been engaged, I'm certain, in all different kinds of thinking when it comes to group life. So our time together, we want to talk to you a little bit. We want to talk to you mostly about groups of 3 to 5 that gather at various times rather than the larger Sunday school experience. So what do you think about the trending ideology for smaller groups of 3 to 5 people beyond the typical Sunday school group that they may already be involved in?
Well, Rick, that's a trend that we're seeing in churches, and I'm excited that we're having that conversation again about smaller groups. It is something that churches have been doing for some time, but more recently has come to the attention of churches. You know, for many years ago, Sunday school classes were much smaller. And that small group in Sunday school actually met that need of that 3 to 5 size group and discipling and accountability.
So I'm sorry, Tim, go ahead.
You know, there is a need for real issues to be discussed, and that's very difficult in a larger context, whether it be a Sunday school class or discipleship group, and in those smaller settings of 3 to 5, those real life issues can be dealt with, but also we've got to remember that they've got to be dealt with from a biblical standpoint, Christian worldview, addressing it that way. It doesn't need to turn into just a group that's there for sharing their concerns with no real application of how to live it out from a Christian perspective.
Sure. And as I understand it, most of these groups are pretty high accountability. They're normally gender-based, men with men, women with women, when it comes to who's meeting together. They pray together. They study together. So the components of group life are there. It's just in a smaller context. And it sounds like you're alerting us to the fact that this is the best way for people to experience up-closeness. Is that kind of what you're helping us understand?
Yeah, and I'd like to say that this has been going on for a long time. It's not something new. In my situation in churches where I've served, and this was probably 20 years ago, we had groups out of larger Sunday school classes for the purpose of accountability, spiritual growth, discipleship, and it truly works and helps people develop.
Wow, I had not realized that movement was taking place years ago. So I know that our audience is going to want to know the very practical, Tim, and I know you're a practical guy. So how would you launch, resource, and sustain these groups of 3 to 5 beyond the Sunday morning commitment?
Well, my strategy that I had, I said that it was easy as 1, 2, 3. Every year we took a different approach. The 1 stood for personal Bible reading. We've set a goal to have people engaged in personal Bible reading, read through the Bible, read through the New Testament. So 1 year out of 3, we would have the Bible reading as an emphasis. The second year was the goal to get couples reading their Bible together and praying together. And then the 3 would be for us to divide up into groups of 3, triplets, for the purpose of prayer and accountability. And basically what we did is we put accountability questions on cards that were about the size of a business card, and we distributed those questions, and everybody met together once a week, and the triplets asked each other those questions. And I basically just had a series of questions from year to year that we use, and we're still using even that approach with accountability in groups of 3 in our mentoring that we do here in Georgia, with 10 questions that we ask all of our group leaders. And if you don't mind, I'll just share with you those 10 questions. Is that okay?
Oh, that'd be excellent. I'm sure people want to know what those questions are.
And the first one is, have you spent time reading the Bible and praying every day the past 7 days? Number 2 is, have you shared the gospel with an unbeliever or invited someone to your group in the past 7 days? Number 3, Have you spent quality relationship building time with your family in the past month? Number four, have you organized your group so that every member receives at least one ministry contact in the past month? Number five, have you led your group to conduct a contact fellowship opportunity in the last month? Number six, have you led your group to conduct a mission project in the last 90 days? Number seven, have you done anything to improve your skills as a group leader in the past 90 days? Number eight, have you spent time mentoring someone to be a group leader this year? Number nine, have you made plans to start a new group this year? And then number 10 is, how can we pray for you more specifically? So the first nine are yes or no. You're not looking for, you know, a dialogue there. You're just yes or no. And then the final question of accountability is where they can expand and say, here's how we, what we need prayer in. So those are some things that we're doing with group leaders, just to build in some accountability, and we've seen success with that.
Well, Tim, those are excellent. Now, let me ask you this question, because I know that the listener is going to want to find those questions and utilize those. I know at the end of the interview, Brian's going to be sharing your blog site. Will they find those questions there on a blog post someplace if they go searching?
They can just email me, and I'll be glad to share those with them.
Excellent. Thank you.
Hey, Tim. So I'm in what we call a fight club, and I'm with two other men at our church. And this is something we meet every other week on Saturday morning, and it's that third environment that we've talked about, that agreement, that, you know, that group of three to five. And this is a disciple making environment that I call life on life, and what you call real life issues. But this was interesting. During a recent discussion or conversation, each of these guys admitted that they had never really seen himself as a disciple. That label was more for pastors and staff types. You know, people, really, not me, is basically what they were saying, right? I was, these are guys that I've known for a little while, not for years, but certainly for months, you know, that may be longer than a year, been around them. But it wasn't until I was in this more intimate, close conversation that this was disclosed. So Jesus called ordinary men into his inmost circle of disciples. So my question is to you, when we're talking about this context of the triads or quads, or the, and really it's a group even beyond Sunday school, or maybe even within Sunday school. So I think we all agree of the importance of this component. And even if it's something that's been around for a long time, the reimagining of this space. So tell us, how can group leaders, directors, educators help the typical guy in the pew see himself or herself more as a practicing or growing disciple? What's that going to take? Because I suspect there's a lot of people out there that say, yeah, I mean, I come to church, but that kind of stuff, that's for somebody else. I'm sure you've run into this before.
Yeah, and Brian, that was the same thing I ran into in a conversation last week with some faithful church people when we were talking about being a disciple. And the same thing that you experienced is the same thing I heard. These folks, I mean, they're regular attenders. Right. They're faithful supporters. They give to the church. They're good folks. And they saw themselves as Christians. They saw themselves as good church members, and that's what they called themselves. But when we talked about the idea of being a disciple, they thought that was something that was more for the super spiritual person. That's not them. They're just ordinary folks. Or worse than that, there were some that said, you know, I thought that being a disciple was just for the people that were in the New Testament with Jesus. So, it's a communication issue that we're having to deal with, and I'm afraid that most pastors and church leaders don't see that, don't know that, and from the pulpit, from their website, from whatever they're doing, they're saying we need to be making disciples, and we need to be disciples, and the vast majority of the people in the pew are going, well, that's great. We wish you luck, but that's not for me. And so we've got to do some things to really help people understand what it means to be a disciple, and that anyone who is a Christian, anyone who is a follower of Jesus, is a disciple. And Brian, you basically answered the question of how do we address this issue. It's not going to be from the pulpit. I mean, we need to continue to communicate disciple making and discipleship, and we need to preach and teach those principles. We need to do that in our large group settings, Sunday school classes. But really, the only way that's going to happen is when we are in smaller groups, those 3 to 5 groups, and we are engaging people in conversations. We've got to be more personal. You know, I've said all along that real spiritual growth does not take place outside the realm of accountability. And so we've got to be in those groups and encouraging people to partake of those groups. So most pastors, I'm afraid, are thinking that, you know, they're going to do discipleship through the pulpit. It doesn't happen. It's got to be more intentional. It's got to be smaller. And I believe that a lot of pastors are afraid of small. And I want to encourage pastors and church leaders to not be afraid of starting small, of being in that group of 3 to 5, and discipling and helping people understand what it truly means to be a disciple of Jesus and how to grow as a disciple.
It sounds like part of the answer is the difference between messaging and DNA, that one may lead to the other, but really we're talking about the DNA of a church as opposed to the language of a church. And I think we all understand that language is a part of DNA, but that's not all of it. It requires rolling up your sleeves and getting into those groups and some organization or some structure that becomes more natural as you use it. But at some point, it's got to be started.
And it does have to be started. And it's something that in an established church, in a legacy church, in that church that's been around for several generations, this concept of disciple making, this concept of discipleship, the idea of spiritual growth, and the spiritual disciplines of growth, prayer, Bible study, fellowship, witnessing, just those basic things, journaling, meditation, you know, those things that we do to grow spiritually, it's a foreign concept to so many in the pew. Their idea of being a good Christian, of being a good church member, is attending and putting your money in the plate and maybe doing something in the church, teaching a class, singing in the choir. But that's their idea of spiritual growth, and we've got to get people in those smaller settings, modeling for them the spiritual disciplines and helping them to encourage them and to experience them.
And Tim, when it comes to the to notions of the additional group setting, we've said it on the show before, but I think where we are in evangelicalism is that we're at a point to where I think for the first time in maybe a couple of decades, or at least a generation, it's acceptable to ask more of people instead of less. The trend for so long was, oh, that's an additional time commitment. But I think now with what we're seeing in our culture, particularly in the political realm, and I think people are seeing the fruits of less. And we have a core group of evangelicals that are maybe for the first time open to more engagement. And this additional group space, call it fight clubs, call it life groups or accountability or whatever it is, I think the time is right. So I think we all agree that this is something that leadership ought to look at. And I think people for the first time in a while are open to that.
And people want real answers. They're struggling with life, and they want real answers, and they need real answers. And for so long, what we've said is the answer is, oh, come sit in our pew or our chairs and listen to our music and our preaching, and your problems will be solved. And that doesn't cut it. We've got to train people how to feed themselves spiritually and grow in that relationship with God through Christ.
All right, changing gears a little bit. I know new groups is something that gets discussed a lot. I would assume that you have led many conferences and lectures and presentations on new groups. Would I be right? All right. Given that, what are some thoughts you have about starting new groups? And specifically, so, you know, in terms of disciple making, discipleship, and growth, is new groups, is that a priority for churches? And because it could be that you just want, you know, you want to channel people more to existing groups. I mean, that could be a school of thought. But if we're right and we do want to grow, we do want, you know, this is a way to multiply leaders. It's a way to start or initiate new experiences. How can church leaders set goals in this area?
Well, it is a significant issue of starting new groups, new Sunday school classes. It is a very prominent issue that churches must address. For example, every year for the past 15 years, I've done a study to determine the fastest growing churches in Georgia. Georgia's my mission field, and 3,600 churches that I work with, and I look at the micro churches all the way to the mega churches, churches that run in less than 50 to the churches that run well over 1,000. And I look at what's going on in those churches. I survey those churches. And here's what I found this past year of looking at those fastest growing churches. These fastest growing churches reported that they started new groups as a strategy to reach new people. 100% of the fastest growing churches, the fastest 150 churches in Georgia, 100% of them said that, oh, we start new groups to reach new people. We need to start new groups to reach new people, but also those new groups also help in discipling folks. And then also, when I ask the question, these are the fastest growing churches. I mean, these are the churches that are baptizing folks. They're not only baptizing, but they're retaining, they're keeping, they're discipling. And when I ask the question to them, how important are starting new classes and new groups to the health of your church? These churches, 100% of them said that the number one factor that led them to grow and to be healthy was starting new groups. So when you're looking at churches that are reaching people and keeping people and discipling folks, new groups is the number one factor. And we've got to be starting new groups. And I'm amazed at the number of churches that the last new group that they started was in 1974 or you know, 20 years ago. So you got to start new groups.
Well, Tim, I appreciate you being with us on the Groups Matter podcast show. Appreciate you making time. I know that you've got a lot of things going on down there. Where are you off to next? You got any events scheduled, or what's the next event you have scheduled?
Well, let's see. Tonight I'll be in a church in Roswell, Georgia, speaking. And then got a few other things this weekend, helping churches with discipleship and also doing some associational training with leaders. Last night I was with a group over between Atlanta and Augusta training Sunday school, small group leaders on how to disciple people through groups.
All right. Just out of curiosity, what is the most common topic that you find yourself addressing?
Church revitalization. Again, most of our churches, you know, 70% of our churches are either plateaued or declining, and my phone rings off the hook and emails fill the box asking, help us breathe life into this church. There's so many of our churches that, and that's not just Georgia, that's everywhere, that are plateaued and declining and wanting to breathe life into their church. So revitalization is a major emphasis right now.
Well, thanks for being with us again, and give Kathy our best.
I'll do it. Y'all take care.
Well, there certainly is nothing new under the sun. You know, this trend is what we call it, of groups of three or five, is something that Tim said, yeah, we've been doing that forever. It's been around for a long time. I do think that there is a renewed emphasis on that. And I think it's the natural follow to the movement of authenticity that was – it kind of came along the same time as the groups movement of the last 15 or 20 years.
Definitely. But I think, Brian, also we're seeing a resurgence of this because we're seeing people who are realizing there's a difference between just being in group and experiencing community and doing what it takes to become a mature disciple of Jesus Christ. And in order for us to become mature disciples of Jesus Christ, the expectations are a little higher than just being in a group. So we're seeing this wonderful movement where people are saying, I want something more. I know there's something more, and the church is responding as appropriately.
Yeah, it's interesting you would say just being in a group, because for so many people listening, probably just getting people in that first group seems like just a Herculean effort a lot of times, just to shepherd people from the crowd and, you know, into community. I don't know why that's so hard. And, you know, what's weird is I think it's almost harder in the South than it is in places like California and maybe the Northeast.
I think you're right, Brian, and I think some of that happens to be that – in the South, we don't have the need to hover with other believers as much, because the truth is,
we feel like everybody.
The culture is Christ-like. Yeah. It's Christian. Yeah. It's not Christ, right. Christian. Yeah. The culture is Christian. You know, when you have people who are journeying because they need each other, because they're being ostracized at work, etc., it changes the game completely. Now, one interesting thing about our conversation, Lyman Coleman, a friend of ours, said years ago that about 10% of people in a church would be willing to be in these smaller groups. So, you know, church leaders need to keep that in mind, too. They're not going to get everybody engaged in a group of three to four. But there will be a percentage of people who will say, yes, I want to go on that journey.
And to Tim's 10 questions, you know, I don't know that those questions are the most important thing as a takeaway here. But I do think in that what you have is by asking the questions, whether people, I mean, you want ministry out of people. You want to see the outpouring of Christ and the Spirit in us, pouring out into people, right? But I think the importance of the questions is a reminder. It's a regular reminder that this is who you are in Christ. This is who you are, and because of that, this is what you do. It's a top-of-mind thing.
Yeah.
And so whether you've done anything in the last 90 days or not, that is important, but it's not as important as this is who you are. This is your charter. This is your mission. And it's just that top-of-mind, and that informs your hours and your days and your weeks. So I think the 10 questions is good.
Well, and you know, Brian, as he was talking about his 10 questions, I couldn't help but think back to the Wesley movement that saved a country when they got people in these groups. We'll just call them groups now. They used a different terminology. But they had a series of questions that they were asked each week to respond to. It gives structure to the experience, and it does, as you said, gives us some direction as to what we should be accomplishing for the kingdom because of our love for Christ, not because of the legalism, the expectation to check off the boxes.
It's kind of interesting that, you know, the request or the most frequent request or topic is church revitalization. I think that's something to keep in mind for future episodes, content-wise.
Excellent.
I don't know what you make out of that, except the word, you know, obviously there's the need to be revitalized for energy. And I think this approach to groups and what Tim was describing and what we've talked about is one of the ways that you can revitalize. Ask more.
Well,
ask
Brian, more. He said something that every person listening to this podcast needs to remember. People often say, how do I grow my church? And they always go to, what's the worship service look like? A church that starts new groups will be a growing church. I mean, they just need to remember that. A church that starts new groups will be a growing church. And that's what Tim said.
And one of the benefits of new groups is there's nothing wrong with joining an ongoing group, but a lot of times it feels like you're walking into a movie in the middle of the movie. New groups allows people to all start together, and that should be a regular part. And I think everyone agrees that's nothing new. It just needs to be a DNA proposition, like what we talked about.
Yeah, great, great stuff.
If you want to get in touch with Tim, you can email him at tsmith@georgiabaptist.org. That's tsmith@gabaptist.org, or go to gabaptistgroup.com. He'd love to hear from you. Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 24. For Rick Howerton, this is Brian Daniel. Appreciate you guys being with us. I look forward to being with you on episode 25, which we'll post in 2 weeks.
Yeah.